Welcome to this Walnut Wednesday edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. In addition to our special Walnut Wednesday report, we'll bring you a look at national and regional agricultural news here on the show today. And I'll start things off with a look at regional agricultural news right after this.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, delivering value to growers and handlers with advocacy, research programs, and walnut promotions. Doing more together.
Higher grape prices in the United States are not just a result of inflation, but are most likely due to adverse weather conditions in grape-growing regions of Mexico. While countries like Chile, Peru, and South Africa had their grape season in April and May, the cold hours during November in the grape fields in Mexico delayed the harvest and put their grapes in a dormant state, impacting the supply and market opportunity window for Mexican grapes in the U.S. A very similar situation happened in a 2019 season, also due to weather changes. Ag Tools Incorporated, a SaaS platform which applies multiple calculators and analyzers to the fresh category in the food value chain, is tracking this trend throughout its weather alerts on the phenological phases that work for more than 500 different crops and overlapping it with other producing regions. According to Danella Mendez of Ag Tools, they expect good quality from the Sonora region as cooler temperatures traditionally lead to larger grapes. However, the impact on the market from the delayed start and larger product size has yet to be seen. The conditions and results of the 2018 to 2019 year may help them to understand likely outcomes for the 2023 season. The 2019 Sonora grape season results and its weather patterns signaled a possible repeat of the bumper crop with better quality grapes during 2023. Sonora's latter and larger volume could impact product availability and pricing during the last two quarters of 2023. The California Department of Food and Agriculture Secretary Karen Ross and Deputy Secretary for Fairs Michael Flores has announced a $20 million Fairgrounds Resilience Grant at Antelope Valley Fair and Event Center. The funding will allow the local fairgrounds to develop a new event center, an emergency operations center, a culinary facility, energy and HVAC upgrades, and related improvements. The grant is part of an $89 million slate of projects at Antelope Valley and 11 other fairground sites around the state. Recently, the California Cotton Ginners and Growers Association and Western Agricultural Processors Association went to Sacramento for 3 days of regulatory and legislative issues discussions. The association's executive leadership and staff met with legislative and regulatory representatives on a multitude of critical issues, including water rights legislation, agriculture funding, property and stock throughput insurance, the proposed indoor heat illness regulation, water quality fees, air quality legislation for the San Joaquin Valley, funding of water projects for medium and high priority areas, port issues, and several other important topics. They met with both legislatures as well as agency staff from the California Air Resources Board. They also met with Katie Hagen. She is the director of the Department of Industrial Relations, State Insurance Commissioner Ricardo Lara, and State Water Resources Control Board member Doreen Diadamo. California Citrus Mutual is welcoming congressional support for critical federal citrus programs, including the Citrus Health Response Program, the HLB Multi-Agency Coordination, and an additional $1 million in federal funding for the new citrus breeding program. The House Appropriations Committee has included additional funding for citrus breeding research to develop and evaluate high-quality superior citrus selections for use in citrus-producing regions and to evaluate rootstock and scion materials, where citrus is commercially grown for the fresh fruit market. The California program is an expansion of the existing national USDA Agricultural Research Citrus Breeding Program located in Florida, which is focused primarily on varieties that are optimized for growing conditions in that state. The program has resulted in new varieties with higher yields, increased disease resistance, improved color, and a longer shelf life. The Florida and California breeding programs, along with the continued efforts of the University of California Citrus Breeding Program at UC Riverside, will work together to deliver the best results for California citrus growers in the near future. The additional funding comes after Congress provided $1 million during a current fiscal year to establish a citrus breeding program at the USDA ARS field station in Parlier. The new California citrus breeding program will identify new citrus varieties that are best suited for changing climatic pressures such as drought, consumer taste preferences, and resistant to pests and diseases. Broadening its commitment to sustainability and corporate social value, Valent Biosciences LLC formally dedicated a new prairie park and solar field adjacent to its manufacturing facility in Osage, Iowa on June 24th. The company also opened the doors of its facility to members of the community, enabling them to see firsthand the broad range of sustainable, biorational products that are made locally. The open house included remarks from leaders of Valent Biosciences parent company, Sumitomo Chemical Company, LTD, and community partners, along with tours, informational displays, and lunch for all attendees. The Jerry Rita Prairie Park is a 34-acre native prairie established to foster a diverse habitat for birds, butterflies, insects, reptiles, and small wildlife. It was created by reconstructing a native tall grass prairie from local farmland. The Prairie Park features an ecosystem of native species of grasses, flowering plants, trees, and shrubs. There are several walking trails in a Prairie Park open to the public, and each trail honors the memory of a champion of the Valent Biosciences sustainability journey. Shane Wiltz served in the United States Marine Corps as a sergeant. He began a successful career with Valent Biosciences in 2015 at the Osage Manufacturing Facility. Ron Maitzoa advocated passionately for agricultural sustainability and was appointed the first director of the Valent USA Sustainable Solutions Business Unit. Robert Antone Tony Stoltz had a long career in agriculture and worked for Pace International, a Valent Biosciences subsidiary. Royce Tack was a beloved Iowa native who served Osage for many years on several community boards. The self-guided trails feature display gardens, including areas of native plants that provide habitat for monarch butterflies during their annual migration from Mexico to North America. The garden was established with the council and support of two local partner organizations, Pheasants Forever and the Mitchell County Conservation Board. Mitchell County 4-H donated 25 handmade birdhouses to provide refuge for migratory birds in a prairie park, while Osage High School industrial technology students built a welcome kiosk for the prairie park. The reconstructed prairie will also be used as a living laboratory to study the impact of a mycorrhizal inoculant on soil health and carbon sequestration. The Maple City Solar Field, which began operations in December of 2022, was built in partnership with One Energy Renewables and Heartland Power Cooperative. The 1.5-megawatt alternating current solar field includes 3,432 bifacial solar panels that produce 3.4 million kilowatt hours of solar generated electricity annually, or enough to power the equivalent of 425 average sized homes. To further support its commitments to renewable energy, Valent Biosciences and One Energy Renewables are also donating 18 solar panels to the Osage Community Schools in conjunction with the event. The Osage Sustainability Celebration is their way of thanking the local community for their partnership over the years and showcasing the innovative technologies and initiatives that Valent Biosciences provides to the industry. That according to Ted Melnick, president and CEO of Valent Biosciences. He says they are extremely proud of their work here, which in partnership with local organizations brings sustainable technologies to farmers and reduces the carbon footprint. Sumitomo Chemical Company has targeted a 50% reduction of greenhouse gas by 2030 and has pledged to achieve carbon neutrality by 2050. The Prairie Park and Solar Field are the latest Valent Biosciences sustainability initiatives to advance that commitment. The Valent Biosciences facility in Osage is the world's largest purpose-built biorational manufacturing facility using the latest technologies to produce environmentally friendly inputs for products used in agriculture, public health, and forest health. At the plant, Midwestern corn and soybeans are fermented into commercial products using technologies that reduce energy use, wastewater volumes, and overall carbon dioxide emissions. A major expansion that will significantly increase the facility's manufacturing capacity is underway and is expected to be completed during the second quarter of 2024. The city of Osage appreciates the excellent relationship with Valent Biosciences, and the Osage manufacturing facility has been a strong partner with the community. That according to Osage Mayor Steve Cooper, he says they support the company's commitment to sustainability as evidenced by the new Jerry Rita Prairie Park, Maple City Solar Field, and other initiatives at the plant. The Prairie Park is a valuable local asset that they believe residents will greatly enjoy.
AgroPlante is the leading manufacturer in specialty products. AgroPlante formulates products that rise to the challenge of today's growing conditions. Saline and sodic soils reduce crop yield and cause significant crop losses. AgroPlante developed Cation EX5 Plus with growers in mind to manage soil salinity. With multiple years of research, Cation EX5 Plus has proven to be an excellent source of calcium and an effective soil salinity manager. Run it through drip irrigation without any issues. Simplify your application method with innovative and efficient formulations. Alleviate salinity stress with Cation EX5 Plus. AgroPlante, imagination, innovation, science in action.
In a very welcomed development for the California walnut industry, it was announced last week that India agreed to remove retaliatory tariffs on walnuts, as well as additional United States products. California Walnut Board's Pam Gravier explained why these tariffs had long been hampering California walnuts.
India imposed a 20% retaliatory tariff against walnuts from the United States, as well as some other fruits, nuts, and non-agricultural products. And this was in response to the steel and aluminum tariffs that the Trump administration had put in place against India, as well as some other countries. And so since 2018, we have been at a competitive disadvantage to other walnuts entering the Indian market. At the same time, and not exactly at the same time, but also in 2018, India changed its base rate tariff on all imported walnuts. So the base rate went from 30% up to 100%. So when you add our retaliatory tariff, if walnuts came from California, the tariff was 120%, but from anywhere else in the world, it was 100%. So that 20% made a significant difference in the cost for the importer and ultimately the consumer. So over time, when you look at 5 years, our exports into India have been slowly decreasing because we were more expensive than walnuts from other parts of the world. So the lifting of this tariff puts us on a level playing field. So we're tariffed the same 100% as any other country that's shipping walnuts into India.
The tariffs had essentially beaten the industry while it was down during a time where growers were feeling hardship in other areas of the industry and still do. The lifting of the tariffs now opens up a range of opportunities that can have huge impacts on the California walnut industry and its growers. India's current walnut consumption is almost non-existent compared to other countries, so the untapped market potential combined with the tariff removal can create large revenue streams and another area to move product. Gravier said California walnuts will be taking advantage of this opportunity through marketing efforts.
When we look at businesses in India, India tends to import most of their walnuts still within the shell. And then they're processed within country. So it provides job opportunities and job growth within the country. And then as walnuts continue to grow in distribution, then there's more opportunities at retail or in food service restaurants, food manufacturing. So it has a tremendous ripple effect that is beneficial, you know, not just for the end-use consumer, but for all levels within the business chain.
Depending on how things play out, Gravier said this development could potentially affect the price growers also receive for their walnuts in future years.
You know, when you look at California, it was 20% more expensive to import than generally, whether it's at retail or in distribution, you would expect California walnuts to be a little more expensive than the competition. So what this does is it makes a fair market value for the walnuts, regardless of where they come from. And that's really beneficial for the California walnut growers, because over time, as consumption increases, we would also expect to see the value that's returned back to the grower increase. It's not going to happen overnight, but it will happen over time.
You're listening to My Ag Life. I'm Taylor Chalstrom.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, delivering value to growers and handlers with advocacy, research programs, and walnut promotions. Doing more together.
Lawmakers have introduced the Farmers Feed the World Act of 2023. The bipartisan bill would keep food in America's international food aid programs. Specifically, the legislation aims to restore the original intent of the Food for Peace program without spending additional farm bill resources, all while safeguarding interests of U.S. farmers. Representative Tracy Manor, Kansas Republican, joined colleagues to introduce the legislation last week. NASA's new Earth Information Center is a real-time hub of climatic and resource data collected from space through partnerships with entities such as USDA. USDA Ag News reporter Rod Bain has the story.
Applause from dignitaries and participants of this week's ribbon-cutting ceremony of the new Earth Information Center. The National Aeronautics and Space Administration oversees operations of the facility. And NASA Administrator Bill Nelson says with several satellites collecting various climate data about our planet,
the data ought to be more understandable. It ought to be more accessible. It ought to be more usable for everyone, everywhere.
Such as the real-time facility at NASA headquarters and virtually through a website at gis.earthdata.nasa.gov. Federal partners in this endeavor include the Agriculture Department, represented at the event by Agricultural Research Service Deputy Administrator Marlon Eve.
We have a long history of partnering with NASA, of working with NASA data
in areas such as drought monitoring and land cover assessments. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
The race to produce sustainable aviation fuel may be the next gold rush in biofuels. Airlines from across the world have been lining up to sign offtake agreements with companies planning to build plants to produce SAF at a blistering pace even before many companies have yet to produce a drop. The airline industry as a whole has pledged to reach net zero emissions by 2050. The list of airlines and SAF production companies matching up is exhaustive. Alaska Airlines, American Airlines, Atlas Air, Delta, FedEx, Hawaiian Airlines, JetBlue, Southwest, United, UPS, and Air Canada have all pledged to cut emissions. United, for example, created a $100 million SAF investment fund and has offtake agreements with World Energy, Fulcrum, Blue Blade Energy, Nest, and Alder Fuels. Though the investments in SAF production and commitments by airlines may be impressive, SAF production as a whole will need to at least double year over year for the next 27 years to achieve net zero in the airline industry. Senate appropriators advanced funding levels for fiscal 24 USDA and Food and Drug Administration spending, veering from House GOP efforts to make deeper cuts than those that President Joe Biden agreed to in the earlier debt limit deal. $700 million more for USDA and FDA than House levels, including more for ag research and food safety, Women, Infants, and Children program, and full funding for SNAP with no new work requirements, a key difference from the House GOP proposal.
We cannot have strong communities if families can't put food on the table or kids go hungry.
That was Senate Appropriations Chair Patty Murray. But Ag Appropriations top Republican John Hoeven says nutrition increases squeezed other spending, forcing tough choices for ag-related programs.
We focused on things that we believe are priorities, starting with things like ag research, which has been so incredibly important for America's farmers and ranchers, making sure that we maintained adequate staffing at both FSA and also at RMA to make sure that the countercyclical safety net and the crop insurance is out there supporting farmers and ranchers across this country.
Supports that could be hard to boost in a five-year farm bill, also squeezed by the GOP-Biden debt limit deal that could punish delays now and down the road. Maine Senator Susan Collins.
Even more problematic, the debt ceiling law includes an automatic across-the-board cut that could occur if all 12 appropriations bills are not passed by the end of the year. We simply cannot allow those indiscriminate cuts to be triggered.
But avoiding that will be tough. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy has already committed to his conservative wing to cut FY24 spending to FY2022 levels, which was not agreed to in this year's debt deal. The Environmental Protection Agency released its renewable volume obligations with lower numbers than expected for 2024 and 2025. Brooke Miller, Executive Director of the Advanced Biofuels Business Council, says it's a step back from EPA's initial proposal.
Locking down a multi-year rule is a positive. We've never had multi-year certainty in this program, so the markets are eventually going to benefit from that. And then the second positive is we're locking down the end of the era of small refiner exemption abuse that has been a problem for this industry since 2016. So that's sort of the upside. The flip side is some of the aggressive biofuel components of the proposal were lost in the final. It's not totally uncommon that we have some sort of mediation that goes on at the highest levels of government on this. We did back off on some of the conventional biofuel volumes, and there is an ongoing concern that the build-out of the renewable diesel markets and biodiesel markets will exceed the volumes contained in the RVO, which of course would create supply problems going down the line. So we think some of the advanced biofuel numbers could have been more aggressive.
He talks about why the final numbers were not as high as the initial EPA proposal.
The optical reason is the White House and EPA tabled their plan to incorporate e-RINs, or RINs for biomass to electric vehicles. And so there were a lot of RINs, a lot of gallons in the proposal that just sort of came out by virtue of the fact that they tabled that proposal. So there's an optical component to this that's not being discussed, and that is, why did the numbers come down? That's the number one reason. The substantive reason is, in particular, the White House is grappling with the degree to which it wants to lean into biodiesel and renewable diesel volumes in the context of the incentives that it has for these fuels and the Inflation Reduction Act for sustainable aviation fuel, the Clean Fuel Production Credit. And so it's a layered consideration now, and I think they sort of were overly cautious on that particular element of it.
Looking to the future of biofuels, Miller says the White House has some important decisions ahead.
The Biden administration has a lot of important decisions to make in the next couple months. It has to make decisions about the degree to which biodiesel, renewable diesel, ethanol is eligible for some of the tax credits that were passed as part of the Inflation Reduction Act, the degree to which they're going to lean into alcohol to jet, renewable diesel to jet for the sustainable aviation fuel targets that it's established, which are very, very aggressive. And so inside the lines on some of these regulatory decisions, that will determine the degree to which the biodiesel, renewable diesel industries and the ethanol industry meet these targets for growth and get to the next level in terms of their importance for U.S. energy security.
Again, that's Brooke Miller of the Advanced Biofuels Business Council. New data released by USDA's Economic Research Service shows access to primary care physicians varies across the United States. The number of primary care physicians per 10,000 residents is generally higher in much of the Northeast, along the West Coast in Hawaii, and parts of the Mountainous West and Upper Midwest. The availability of primary care physicians per capita is generally lower in much of the Great Plains, especially in the Southern Great Plains and the Lower Mississippi Delta and Southeast. However, there are substantial variations in the availability of physicians within these regions. For instance, in rural counties, there are fewer physicians per capita in counties adjacent to urban counties than those farther from urban areas. USDA says this is likely because residents travel from nearby rural areas to urban doctors. The lowest rates of physicians per capita are in rural counties with urban populations of less than 2,500.
Introducing My Ag Life Jobs, the pathway to career opportunities in California agriculture. Whether you're currently in pursuit of employment or searching for talent as an employer, our network serves as the resource to connections in the agricultural industry. Plant roots in your career and embark today by exploring jobs.myaglife.com. That's jobs.myaglife.com.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing team, thank you for listening.